My name is Jeff Kerr. My wife, Christy, and I pastor in Farmington. We planted Homestead Community Church 11 years ago in Farmington, and we'll talk a lot more about our story as a church and how we've seen God open some doors to connect with our community. A year ago, we planted another location in Hastings. Our main background picture here is the bridge in Hastings, and so I picked that one. We are a year into that, and it's going well. We have a campus pastor there, Jeff and Megan Merricks. There you go. And they joined our staff pretty early on in our church, and we've seen God do great things in their lives and just prepare them for ministry and ministry calling, and seeing them go from, you know, 10 years ago they were not, they were church attenders, and Jeff Merricks was in the military, and Megan was doing work for some different companies, and we saw God kind of unearth their leadership gifts, which they had, but in a ministry context, and seeing what they're doing in Hastings has been great. So I want to talk today about just reaching our community, and we're going to talk about bridges, barriers, and blessings, and they all start with the same letter, so you know this is well thought out, right? let's just open in prayer, and then we'll get going. Lord, thanks for this time, and I thank you for every church that is represented in this room, whether it's from pastors and leaders or staff members or people who are looking to plant a church someday, or just people in a community looking to reach their neighbors and their coworkers and other friends and family. So Lord, we commit this time to you and ask that you would be lifted up in everything that is said and done in Jesus' name. Amen. We'll have some time for Q&A at the end. We want to make sure we have some time for that. When we planted our church, and this session was kind of built around this question, I was asked, or maybe you've heard this, and I heard this question early on as we were planting a church, and I've always thought about this question in regards to how we connect with our community. And the question is this: if your church just overnight ceased to exist and was no more, would your community notice, or would it care? And I've thought about that, because I think, you know, I was using, and I'm not bashing any churches, and this session is not about, look at all the things we're doing. We're going to use some stories of what God has done in our community. But across the street from our church, there was another church that met there for 5 years, and they moved, they relocated, and they left town. And I don't know that they weren't a church that was really in the community at all. And I've heard a number of people, we've actually, that space across the street, we started leasing for our kids' space, because we're in kind of a downtown, small town, downtown context, and we'll talk more about that. But a number of people come by and say, oh, you guys are in this space now. Well, yeah. What was here before? Or like, didn't a church used to be here? And what, where, you know, there was not a lot of impact from this church into the community. So that question, if your church ceased to exist, would your community even notice, or would it care? That was a big guiding factor for us from day one. We want to, any church planters, like you're a part of a new upstart church in the room at all, a few, yep. Anybody who's been a part of a new church or a church that isn't established yet, even more so than established churches, you want to invite people. You want to have a strong church. We've heard breakouts and speakers talk about systems. You want things to be run well. You need to have people coming to your church. If for no other reason, you need to pay some bills and keep the doors open and actually have a church. So we wanted to do that, but a guiding factor for us was we were in Farmington. If you don't know, Farmington is part of the Twin Cities area. It's kind of the furthest south suburb. So you're at the Mall of America here, you keep going, you get to Apple Valley, and then you keep going, and you think you're almost in Iowa, almost to Austin, Minnesota. Farmington is kind of the end of the metro area, so there's some farm fields around, and it feels a little bit like a small town, even though it's part of the bigger metro area. We wanted to pastor our city so that the city, people in the city who weren't connected to a church, could experience abundant life in Jesus. We wanted to connect with people that weren't going to set foot in our church. We wanted to be an impacting church so that the community was glad we were there. And so I'm going to talk about some bridges to that, the way we've seen that work well, some barriers, some things that we have done, some things that I think a lot of churches do that maybe not knowing, they are putting up barriers between unchurched people, people that are not a part of a church, and coming to your church. There might be some barriers there that you need to consider as well. And then finally, some blessings, just some fruit of what we have seen God do over the last 10 years in some really, really amazing city connections. So I have a couple of disclaimers. The first one is this. I'm going to show a bunch of pictures of stuff we're doing, tell a lot of stories. This is not at all about, hey, we're the experts in this. This is just what we have seen God do in our context. So this is highly contextual. This is part suburb, part small town, our church location. We're going to talk about our church building, the strategic placement of the building that we bought to be our church home, where it's located in the city. A lot of these things have shaped how we want to reach our community. And that might not be the case for you. So the point of that is, this is not a, well, you got to start a parade and you got to, you know, do a Christmas thing. And that you find what your community context needs, find some needs there, find ways that you can serve, find ways that you can connect. And God's going to give you the creativity to do that. God wants his people to be reached by his churches, so he's going to give you the context for your community. So find your context. Also, this is highly contextual to how you are wired, your gifting, your strengths, what you love to do. So you might look at some of these things that we're doing and you're like, that sounds exhausting. And there are a few things that are exhausting, but a lot, and I'll just say this right from the get-go, this is a lot to do with my wife, who could not be here today. Her name is Christy. She is so gifted, so talented in a lot of ways. She loves to throw parties. She loves to spend other people's money at throwing big parties. And so she thrives in some of the things that we're going to talk about. So a lot of that is, yeah, this is how we are wired. This is our personality. This is our giftings. The stuff we do in Farmington fits us. We love it. We are filled up by it. There are times where I'm exhausted. I'll tell more stories, but we are now, our church is kind of the main coordinator for both citywide kind of carnival parades and carnivals that happen throughout the year. So I get exhausted by that, but I love it. My wife thrives on it, and she could do more. So we have now instituted a 2 citywide parade limit on what we're going to do every year. I think we're capped out. That's probably more than most churches. I joked with her the other day. I said, you know, I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with Barna, and Barna Research does a ton of church research. And so I was joking with my wife and I said, Barna Research just came out, and as far as the stat of churches doing citywide parades, we were number one in the nation, right? We don't need any more. We don't need any more. But she does a lot of that, and I'll tell more of that story. But all of this is contextual for you. Find, really, the hope that I want for this session is I want you to find or dream about or think about or pray about just some context and ways that you as your church could tangibly, practically connect and serve your city. And so we'll dive into that. When we planted in Farmington 2015, we had lived in Farmington for 10 years prior. So there's not an easy way to plant a church, but that's probably the easiest. When you've already lived in the community, you know a lot of people, you have a lot of connections in the community. But a few people asked, when they heard that we were planting another church, why does Farmington need another church? And that was a good question. That's a good question to consider. Because there was the typical Minnesota towns, there's a couple of Lutherans, they've divided along their history of theology beliefs, I'm not sure where, and then there's the Catholic Church, the Presbyterian, there was the Methodist Church, there was a Baptist Church, there was even another Assemblies of God Church, Christian Life Church, now Bethel's Rock in Farmington, they were going at the time. And so people would say, we got so many churches. Even church people were like, why do we need another church? There's so many churches. And that caused us to think about, what are we bringing to this city that isn't already here? We don't want to be here just trying to say, okay, if Farmington is 20,000 people at the time and there's 2,000 of them that are Christians, we're all fighting for these 2,000 Christians, trying to get them to come to our church instead of another church, like we're playing a game of hungry, hungry hippos, or if that's the right analogy. We want to find things in the community that are not, or find needs in the community that might not be met currently. And so we prayed about it, we thought about it, and what I I jotted down, I remember in a journal I was praying through this, and I said, well, it seems like we have a lot of people in our town that go to church, but it is not impacting their life. Whether it's because they just see it as irrelevant, or it's just this something that they've always done, they've always gone to church. And the number one story we will hear from people who start attending Homestead Community Church is, and they'll say their story like it's like like they think they might be the only one. And I just reassure them. I said, this is a lot of people's story. It's, well, I grew up whatever denomination, mainline denomination. Parents made me go, and then once I had a choice, I was like, this had nothing for me, and church didn't mean anything, it didn't impact my life, and so I was away from church for a long time, but now I recognize I just need something. That is a common story. So we recognize there's a lot of people who go to church or say they go to church, but it's not impacting their life. There's nothing life-giving about it. And there is a growing number of people in every community that don't have that church connection. It used to be probably 20, 30 years ago, everybody had some sort of church that they had some church experience. Parents made them go, grandparents made them go, they got confirmed or they got baptized in some church. But a growing number of people don't have that at all, which is a new reality in our nation and in our culture. And then there is a growing number of people who have negative views of the church. They are actually anti-church. And we heard from a few of those when they heard we were planting another church. Why do we need another church? We don't need another church. They're just, for whatever reason, they just want your money. They're just, no, there goes our property taxes and all the things that they think they know about the church. So we recognized that and we said, well, we want to build bridges with those people. If it's people who are going to church, we don't want to pull them from a church, but we want them to understand this is the source of life. Like, there is life impact that happens through the local church. We want those who have walls built up about church because they had a negative experience to have some contact with people in our church and realize, oh, that wasn't terrible, and maybe that could be a bridge. Because here's what we got to know is that the Holy Spirit is at work drawing everybody to Jesus. That's the Holy Spirit's job, to draw people to Jesus. Even if people are not filled with the Holy Spirit, the presence of God is convicting them, is revealing things in their lives. There's going to be moments when they wake up in the morning and they're like, is this all there is? Or life is going to happen and a tragedy happens and they are shaken and they're just all of a sudden made aware of their spiritual need. And if the bottom falls out of their life, or they recognize a need or a conviction that they have, I want there to be a bridge that we've built, even if it's as simple as you've seen us cleaning up trash in the city, or you see our building and the people there have always been nice. That alone, if that causes them to be like, well, I need something, maybe I'll go see if it's there. Maybe I'll go see if there's hope there. That was what we were trying to do. Those are the people we were trying to reach. So when we first started, I already went two slides ahead. So we started meeting in the Methodist church in town. So that's our sanctuary when we first launched. It was cool looking. I mean, it's nice. It was, we had some people, I think it was probably maybe 60 or 70 years old. The Methodist congregation was down to about 15 or 20 older generation people. They were always being told by their denomination that you're probably going to get shut down in a couple of years, and they're still going strong today. That's great. But we started meeting there. We started actually meeting there on Sunday nights. Our first year there, we were Sunday nights. There's no air conditioning in that room. So you see all the cedar, all the woodwork up there. After that thing's been cooking in the sun all day, it smelled and felt like a sauna. It was something. So it's very old style. The rest of the church, it has that look, it has that feel, it has that, you know, smell. Not a bad smell, but it just, there would be people who come in and they had the nostalgic view of it. Oh, this reminds me of my grandma's church. They loved that. And then there was people that come in and just like, oh, this reminds me of my grandma's church. And it was like a very different view, but it all had that feel. So right away, day one, we focused, and I had come out of 15 years in church music ministry and production in some very kind of high production environments. And just personally, I was a little weary of that. But because of this as well, and also because of the vision of the church, we focused less right away on the church services themselves and more on building the culture and the community and the feel of the group of people, so that that would be something that could perhaps stand out. That when people would come visit, they're like, wow, this building is old, and the church service, it was fine. There wasn't anything super. There was no lasers or video walls. It was the projector that they had there. We were able to use that. But whenever the lamp went out on the projector, I had to do some serious Google searching to find anyone who still stocked a lamp for that projector. They said, that is really old. You should get a new projector. I'm like, I know. But so this was by intention, and also because of the reality we were in, we did not rely on having a really, really high-produced, awesome church service. We said, we want to build this a different way. The reason we picked a building like this rather than going into the local high school auditorium, well, because we didn't feel like setting up every Sunday morning for a long time. And if anyone's been through that, you say amen to that. But also, we wanted a place that we could use through the week for different community life. So there would be times where midweek the kids would come in and we'd have midweek discipleship, things like that. So we focused more on building the community and connecting with the community. Now, I mention this because this is a big point. It might not be the case in the context that you're in, but I know this, I've experienced it. If you allow it, you'll end up putting a lot of calories and resources and time and energy into that 1 hour or hour and a half church service that you'll get your church people to come to. But if you allow it, that will be more and more and more, is that it'll become almost like all-consuming of everything that you do is going to be like, we got to get that church service right. We got to get that church service right. And that can be very impactful. And we know that God moves in those moments. And you also need a church service for the church people to come to, give in an offering. Thankfully, online giving is kind of taking some of that pressure away. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, if there was a snow day on a Sunday, pastors were just like, there goes a weekend of offerings. But now because of that, you need those times for the church to come together. Those are important. But if all you're doing is thinking this is what the church is about, I think that's an outdated model. I remember maybe 20 years ago where the model was this. We're going to draw unchurched people to our church because we're going to have a church service that they're not going to believe. We're going to have a band. It's going to be mind-blowing guitar solos and screens and smoke machines and that, and I was a part of it. I was one of the contributors to that, okay? So I'm to blame. At that time, it was effective because there wasn't a lot of churches doing that. And you had people who were used to traditional church, and they would come in and hear more music that was like contemporary and like, wow, and that message was applicable and it was engaging and entertaining and there was coffee and there was all these things. That was something that drew unchurched people. I don't believe that's the case as much anymore because now we have 20 years of really a lot of churches trying to replicate the same thing. I'm a part of church planter conferences around the nation with Pastor Doug Vogley, and we're always at a young church plant for these events, and I go in there and I enjoy it. It's all good, but I think you could put me, I would have no idea any distinction of this church because it looks and feels and sounds exactly the same. Everything is exactly the same. It's like this new kind of warehouse, screens, worship team, the one dude with the guitar, a couple of ladies, some tracks and some, you know, in-ears, and it's all the things that we've done for so long. I don't believe, it's nothing wrong with it, I just don't believe it's standing out in our community as it once did. I think that's an older model, my opinion. It will attract church consumers, it will attract the church crowd, and it will, and I'm saying these things like they're all bad, there's good and bad in all of these things. It will engage your congregation, but if that's all you're doing and you're not fostering a community that's going out and meeting the needs in your community, it's just going to end up being a, come here, we got a great program, and hopefully this will inspire you to come back next week. So I've talked to our staff about this, our approach to our Sunday morning services, because I don't want it to be a disaster either. So what I say is there's like the, think of like three levels. There's the Uber produced, like everything is just fantastically done and a lot of money and technology and it's really, really professional. And then there's some churches, and we all have been to some churches where it's painfully bad. Like, just, it's like, oh man, nobody's thought about this. They haven't turned on the lights. Did somebody think about did somebody bother to vacuum the floor? Has the worship team ever met each other? Like, it's one of those things. So I said, there's those two extremes. In the middle is a whole happy middle of let's have some musicians that play competently. Let's let the congregation sing some songs that they know. We're going to celebrate. We're going to read the word. Hopefully the preaching's good, and that's something that I think will stand out in the church world, is just really engaging biblical communication. But I said, other than that, I'm not going to stress about all the transitions, if there's dead air or the video didn't start on time. I existed in that world, and the stress level got so high for everybody, we kind of started missing the point. So all that to say, we were not trying to do that. We were trying to build the community. I wanted people to come to our church, even in an old building like that, and feel like they were welcomed to around a group of people that were normal, that were welcoming, kind. They weren't being judged for their lives. They were real. They weren't trying to be super cool, because there are a lot of people walking into your church that are defensive. They're nervous. They maybe remember church from their childhood, and they know they need something, and they're like, okay, I'm going to give church one more try. They just want to walk in somewhere and feel something real and welcoming and a community. I have a friend that I've met at the gym I go to. And him and his wife started coming to our church, and he had a lot of church hurt. And so after his visit to the church, I saw him at the gym the next day. He said, hey, church was great. And his quote was this. He's like, it's nice to leave a church service and not hate yourself. And so I was like, well, there you go. So we're going to talk about some bridges, barriers, and blessings. So these are things. Now, some of these bridges are going to be things like, well, duh. But I know a lot of times we say that we're about all these things, but maybe not actually doing them. And I'm just giving you, from church plant to now 11 years in, these were the things that felt most effective for connecting to a community that wasn't already attending a church. And also serving our city and reaching the city as well. So this one is fairly obvious, and you're going to be like, really? I came to this breakout for this? Kids and youth. Okay, when we, and again, contextual, our Hastings church plant has the first group of people that have come have been more in the empty nester phase. When we planted in Farmington, it was families with kids and teenagers everywhere. The first year in, I was like, we don't have a youth pastor yet, but we got all these teenagers that want to go to youth convention. So I guess I'm going to youth convention. I found myself on Friday night at a Perkins at 3 a.m. with my kids from my youth group, and I thought, I need a youth pastor, because I can't. When you get to a certain age, I'm 52, you get to a certain age, you don't bounce back from 3 a.m. like you used to, right? The teenagers are fine. That took me about a week to recover. Here's what I have found, and I've had a number of conversations with neighbors, with people, unchurched people. People are more open to their kids' spiritual life and investing in their kids' spiritual life than they are about their own spiritual life. I've had many parents who are like, yeah, I don't go to church. It's not really my thing, but I would love to have my kid grow up in some of these things. And I find that so interesting. I'll say to them, well, you can do that too. But then they're like, well, I grew up in a church and it was a terrible experience. But then they want their kid. I'm like, do you want your kids to go through that same thing? Like, there's something in them that they see spiritual formation, and they're young. They want to parent well, and they are open to spiritual lives in their kids and their teenagers. So right away, we had our Sunday morning church service, and we put a lot of effort into a midweek kids discipleship class. And my wife taught the girls, and I taught the boys, and that was a huge inroad for people in our community. Just midweek, free, engaging things for their kids that they could go to, and their kids enjoyed it, and they were learning valuable life tools. Even if they did not want to go to church, there was something about that they were willing to say, yeah, I want my kid to be a part of that. And it was also great for Christy and I, the first few years of the church, to teach all the kids, because we just got to know all the kids in the church. And now some of those kids are like graduating from high school and in college, and we still have such a great connection with them. That was a That was a key thing that we saw, a bridge to the unchurched in our community. We have a number of family units in our church that either the whole family's there, but the kid or the teenager started coming first because of a kid event. They got invited to youth group, and all of a sudden the parents were like, what is happening to my teenager? If that's what's going on, if that's the change that's going on, and like night and day difference of they were sad all the time. There was this all the time. And now look at the life that's in them. I got to check it out. We were just on a vacation with our youngest, who's a senior in high school, a group of her friends and their parents. It's this weird thing to be like, why are we going on vacation with parents of my daughter's friends from school? We don't know any of these people. We knew a couple of them. But one of them came up to me, and I'd met him maybe once before. And on this vacation, he said, I need to thank you for what your church has done for my daughter, who's graduating from high school. He said, you have no idea the difference that that has made in her life. And the whole weekend, he was just saying that over and over, man, what you guys have done for McKenna is just amazing. We have seen a number of families where the teens or the kids have come first, and the rest of the family has come because of that. And if you're a parent and you got a kid that's like, I want to go to church, you got to be pretty cold-hearted to say, no, we're not going to church. Stay at home and play some video games, right? This is something that has been a huge draw. And we have a number of youth group families that are praying, and they're inviting their family. And I'm inviting, I talk to their parents too, and they're like, oh, no, that's not for me, but I'm glad my kid's there. But that has been a huge inroad. We had one kid lives like a block away from our church now that he just saw on Wednesday nights, all the teenagers are hanging out there, so that's where I want to be. Teenagers are like that. They're like, that's where all the people are. I'm going to hang out there. Started coming to youth group, got saved, got to youth camp, got to youth convention, and he just was like, comes from a really, really difficult home situation. And he just said, this is the first time in my life I have ever felt valued. And we are praying for his parents, but this inroad with kids and teenagers. So we, in addition to youth group, kids, things, we started some easy on-ramp events. We discovered that you can buy cheap laser tag guns on Amazon. They're nothing fancy. They're laser tag guns. And we got them fairly inexpensive. We just started having family laser tag nights. And then we had boys and girls different laser tag nights. And that was a fun thing where kids would invite their friends, and we'd have all these kids from families in our community that had never been to church. They start showing up. Here's one picture of one of those laser tag nights. That's the boys' laser tag night. I don't know why the shirts came off, but there was a few shirts. We had our Hastings campus pastor. This was several years ago, so he was doing announcements when we showed that picture, and he's like, we had a great laser tag boys' night. We had boys running around, and they were running around going commando and this like commando fighting. But when you go commando, it means you're running around without underwear on. And so I had to get up and say all the boys were wearing their underwear. But that was that night. The smell in that room was really, really bad. And the difference, if you want to know that boys and girls are different, have a laser tag night, and you just see their personalities come out, and it was great. And then we started family kickball nights. Again, we rented a kickball field, and we just invited everybody. This was just an easy, what we were trying to do is to create easy, non-threatening ways for people to say, I don't want to go to church, but I'll go play kickball, or I'll send my kid to laser tag. And then after that, if they think, oh, those people were normal. Oh, some of those preconceived ideas I had about church, that might not be the case. Oh, I would actually like to be around them. And again, easy connections through kids, youth. So then the next bridge is connection. And you're like, duh. But I want to know if you've ever felt this, where you're walking into a church. Church conferences do this a ton, where you're walking up and they've got the assigned greeters at the door. They're the hype squad. They've got the square signs or the foam hands and high fives and the music thumping, and everyone's just like, yeah, welcome to church. And that's not my vibe, right? I'm just like, okay. But people see that as like the welcome or the connection. Like everyone was greeted and everyone felt like they were welcome because we had people shouting at them, you're welcome here. And that's never done it for me, right? We wanted people to feel welcomed and not just greeted. We wanted there to be something other than just the people opening the door, hi, welcome to Homestead Church. So we worked on that culture a ton. We talked to our church people and I said, we need you to not talk to your friends for that hour on Sunday before and after. Find people, or talk to your friends and bring other people in. Find people you don't recognize. Learn names. There are some stats, actually from Barna, who said we were the number one parade-throwing church in the nation. Actual stats from Barna, the loneliness epidemic, the percentage of people now who say they have zero close friends, the percentage now versus 30 years ago, the percentage now has quadrupled. A high number of our population say they have zero close friends. And this is, again, coming from my previous breakout that I was in talking about AI and the virtual world. In our digital age where everything is under the guise of being more connected, we're more connected, we can get access to information and church material, you can find any sermon you want. In all of that, we're more connected. There is the loneliness epidemic that is growing. People are more lonely and more isolated. This idea of true human connection in a life-giving environment is going to be the currency of the church moving forward. As everything is virtual, I don't believe it's going to be too long before you can have a completely AI church service where you're watching something on a screen that is not real at all. I think that's probably going to be something that happens. But the currency of human connection is going to be the thing in all areas of life. They're talking about it in music, in movies, in business, in leadership, in sermon preparation, in all of these things. The human connection is going to be, there's going to be this distinction. Is this real or is this virtual? And the real connection is going to be the church's superpower if we do it right. So we want to be less online, more community. We have online church, but I kind of make fun of them from time to time. If I'm talking to the camera, I'm like, we want you here. Because watching is not the same as being in the room and getting to know people. I wanted people to feel like they were a part of a family. So I think the more important volunteer role in any church, rather than the people opening the door with the signs and welcoming, would be your job is to not wear a lanyard, but to just go around and meet people. Find people who are engaging. Don't put the weird people doing that, because that can get awkward. My father-in-law, Roger Lane, maybe you know the name Roger Lane, he passed away 3 years ago. He was just so good at that. He would just walk around and he'd get people's phone numbers and connect them. People are signing up for groups and serving, because he's just connecting. I remember growing up in a church, my dad was the pastor. There was a dad of a friend of mine who was just so good at that. And it wasn't an official role. He wasn't following a script. He was just creating that community. I think maybe one of the top feedback we've gotten from people who've come to our church is, and it's one of my favorites, is I came to your church, I didn't know anybody, but I felt like I knew everybody. Like I felt like people were glad I was there. It sounds so simple. Everyone's going to say they do it. Yeah, we're a welcoming church, but you got to really look at, are you a welcoming church? Are people glad to be a part of that community? Here's where we're going to spend a little time. This is a big one. This third one, serve the city. We looked into our city to find needs that we could help with. And again, as a startup church, we're like, we're on a tight budget. So if they're like, yeah, we need a new skate park built, like, well, we can't do that, right? We don't have the money for that. We were a tithing church. That meant from day one, whatever money came in, 10% of that was going to go out. It since has gone up with missions and endeavors and other things. But we wanted to have some money that if we could help with a need in the community, we would. Our city officials, when we started talking to them about this, they would respond with, really? They were suspicious because their experience with churches was, well, we haven't had churches do that. They were used to churches looking to get something from the city or to complain about their treatment from the city or complain about parking or this or that. And they were just like, oh. And they were, again, skeptical because they're like, okay. And this is why I'll say a number of times, this has been a slow build over 10 years of just earning their trust, building that bridge. But we talked to the city. We said we want to serve just to serve. We're not looking to get anything out of this. If nobody comes to our church because of what we're doing here, we're okay with that. We want to serve just so that we can answer that question I asked early on. If your church disappeared, would anybody care? We wanted our church to be something that people looked at and be like, oh, the church can be a good thing for a community, because there were more and more people who didn't believe that. So we looked for any city initiatives we could help out with. And we have had a number of people, again, I mentioned the feedback that I came to your church and I felt welcomed. Another feedback we get is, I watched your church from a distance for about 5 years, and I saw what you did for the community, and I thought, okay, I'll give that a try. They watched and they observed. It was a slow build. One of the very practical things we did was we have a back-to-school weekend, the weekend before everyone goes back to either college or school. We invite all the teachers. We say, we're going to pray a blessing. We've all the students come up. We pray a blessing over their school year. We thank the teachers. We pray for them. And we tell all the kids, we've got a gift for you to take to your teacher or one of your teachers. And it's, you know, been like a beverage tumbler or a notepad or highlighters. I mean, you can get that stuff pretty cheap. And in that, we put a card and we just say, thank you for teaching and what you do in the community. If there's ever something you need for your classroom, or you have a student in need that needs something, please let us know. And if we can help, we'd be happy to do that. Again, we were limited in resources. And then we left our cell numbers, my wife's cell phone number and my cell phone number and our email address. And at first, people were like, really? And we would get a lot of emails back like, hey, thanks for the beverage tumbler. They didn't say, that's the 35th that I've gotten this week, right? It's a closet of them. Or we tried to be, you know, notepad or whatever. They were just like, yeah, it was very thoughtful. And then eventually some teachers like, hey, we have a kid who doesn't have mitts or boots or a coat. We actually could use like a few extra just pairs of mittens or... we had one teacher that says, we're doing a lot with iPads now, and some of the students don't have earbuds. And if we just had a bucket of earbuds that we could have, and you can go online and get a pair of earbuds for $5. So we just said, okay, we'll buy a bunch of those and send them there. So recently we had the school district, the last probably few years, they do for the fifth graders, a hygiene unit, which is always encouraged for the fifth graders. And they want to give out a travel-sized stick of deodorant. Again, highly valuable for these fifth graders. And they're like, this isn't in the budget. Would you be willing to do that? And for like 3 years, we bought deodorant for all the fifth graders in Farmington. And it's not a huge, I feel it's an investment in the future. Yes. Perhaps an investment in their future dating life. And right. Yeah, and laser tag night. We keep a few of them around there. But more than that, we, over the years, we have had, anytime we meet a teacher, they're like, oh, Homestead, you're the ones that do the things. We've had a reputation now of, and really, a lot of this is just about building trust. A lot of people just have views of church that are negative, and we're just building trust. But the biggest thing that happened in our community connection was when we bought our building, we moved out of the Methodist church. We bought this building, which in this picture looks awesome. So this is right on Main Street, Farmington. So if there's a Main Street corner in Farmington, it's there. This is a building that's been in, it's 1880 it was built. A whole history, another breakout will be how to deal with buying a building from a difficult person. But if you go into the local McDonald's in Farmington, a drawing of this building is on the wall. It's kind of like the Farmington building. It was a journey to buy it. We bought it and then we started renovating it and then COVID hit and it was a whole thing. But God's timing was such that we were able to get it, open it. The sanctuary is up here. I'll just show you. Like, this is our awesome sanctuary. Windows, that's the glory of the Lord right there. Coming in. So upper level, it's unique. We are tight on space. We don't have offices there, but we saw the location and the character of it right in the heart of our city for what we wanted to do as perfect. So right after COVID, I started serving on what was known as Due Days, the Due Days Committee. Due Days is Farmington's City Festival. It's been going on forever. It was called Due Days because in 1979, here's a little trivia for you that you don't care about. 1979, Mountain Dew came to the city of Farmington and said, Farmington drinks more Mountain Dew per capita than anywhere else in the nation. So we want to do Mountain Dew Days as a festival. I'm pretty sure they made it up just as a marketing ploy, but they put some money into a festival, Mountain Dew Days, in 1979. And then a couple years later, they pulled their money out, but they kept the festival going and just called it Dew Days for no other reason than they didn't feel like changing the name. So I joined the Dew Days Committee, a committee of volunteers that put on the city festival. It was after COVID, it was pretty close to dying. There wasn't a lot going on. So the first year I'm in this committee with volunteers, with some city council members, and the mayor was there a little bit, and the police chief, and just getting to know them was huge. And it all happens around our church. So every fourth weekend in June, you should come this year, it's gonna be great. 5,000 to 6,000 people just wandering around the streets. There's food trucks, there's games, there's the big tent they set up with the band, there's all of these things, and we're like, we would be crazy not to be involved in this. So this is why it's contextual for us. You might not have a church where the city festival is around it, right? The parade for this comes right in front of our building, and we'll talk more about that in a second. I gotta speed up here. I was involved in the planning committee, and I just said, hey, we've got this building, we've got resources, and the best thing that churches have is just an army of volunteers. Yeah. We bought them all red shirts that say Homestead Community Church, and they just started serving. Whatever you need us to do, we started going on the parade route after it was done. We'll pick up all the trash. If you need trash is emptied, we'll send the youth group to do that, right? All of these things. But the first thing I said, okay, they said, I'm going to tell a story. I don't want it to be offensive in any way, okay? I said, well, what can we do? And they said, well, the first event on Thursday night is something called Thirsty Thursday. And I said, well, what's that? I said, well, that's when all the liquor store liquor vendors come under the big tent, and they put out samples, and people will pay their $20, and they come in and drink all they want. I'm like, okay. So what do you need? Well, we really need just a sound system. Like, we just want to have music playing. I said, I got that. So I said, I can set up a sound system and a microphone, and I'll just set it up there. I'll have some music playing, and you Thirsty Thursdayers can have at it. So then I set it up. It's all going. And then they said, okay, Jeff, when you make your announcements, we need you to announce this. And I'm like, what? He's like, well, you're hosting this. I'm like, what? Jim Philbeck, if you are listening, I don't. Please let me keep my credentials. No. I'm like, okay. So I was like, all right. So this is a picture of Thirsty Thursday happening under the big tent. So I'm on the stage and I'm making announcements. Hey, welcome to Thirsty Thursday at Dew Days. We want to thank our sponsors, and I would always make sure, because we donated the sound system, we want to thank our sponsors, Homestead Community Church, and then all of these other names. So if you're like, that's crossing the line, I understand that. But that was like my first experience. The next year for Thirsty Thursday, in addition to that, they had my wife and I at the table collecting tickets, and then we had church people showing up to Thirsty Thursday, seeing their pastors sitting there. They're like, this feels like a trap. And I'm like, you're fine. So that was our first take into that. The next year I said, well, Friday night there's bingo going on under the big tent, but there's not really anything else for kids. What if I set up stuff and I had some lights and sound equipment? What if we just had like a dance party? And we had a dance party right outside our building. So the next year, that's the dance party. So behind this picture is that corner of the building. So some of the local FFA people came and taught everybody line dances. So it kind of grew from there. And we did a kids game carnival on our lot where the kids could come and buy tickets to play all the carnival games. And that money went to Speed the Light, which was awesome. So it was this great thing. So over the years, it has grown. And over the years in those meetings, it was building that reputation with the city of, oh, this church actually just wants to help. At no point did we say, hey, we need this now. Hey, we need you to build us a parking lot now. Or, hey, when are we going to get something in return for this? It was, we simply just wanted to serve. So after the years, or over the years, it has grown and grown. And every year, 200 people in red shirts go out from our building, and they're just meeting people and cleaning up. And as weird as it is, it's like people are like, hey, is there a place I can smoke? Do you got a light? Or is there like bathrooms? We've opened up our building to be like public bathrooms, and that is an investment. That is, you don't want any part of that. But it has grown. We hosted all sorts of things. We met key city leaders. We are serving the city and the army of red shirts that go out. It's just letting the community know this church is here to serve. Again, another example that you might be offended by, but a lady in the community doesn't go to church. She every year she saw the red shirts and she talked to Christy and I. And she's like, what? She was asking the question, trying to say, how do you get your volunteers to serve like this? And she phrased it like this: what kind of meth are you giving away to get your volunteers to show up and serve like this? So that was her way of saying, wow, these people have no reason to be here, but they are here serving, picking up trash, doing the things. So now, a couple of years ago, the mayor came to my wife and I and said, hey, would you consider running this festival, chairing the committee? So my wife now runs the city festival, which is her love language. She loves it. And we have now struck up a corporate partnership with Top the Tater. Anybody know Top the Tater?
Yeah.
It's really a Minnesota thing. Every ounce of Top the Tater is made in Farmington at the Kemp's plant there. And we're like, why are we not tapping into that? So they partnered with us. And so last year was the first ever Top the Tater Days. And it's all happening right outside our church. There's a stage, a separate band, and we get to put our church people in one of the bands. And down this street is all the inflatables. There is, I guess I got a couple other pictures here. It's like a mini state fair almost. You got stuff for the kids. And I always love taking pictures of all these things happening with our cool building in the background. This is under the big tent, the food trucks. This was the car show. We hired another band. The world of bands that want to play at these festivals, that's a dark place. I get emailed all the time, and they're like, there is some strange bands out there. And then it ends with the parade on Sunday after church. We always walk in the parade. We always have VBS coming up a month later. We always have our theme for VBS. We advertise that. Our characters are in their VBS costumes. So this last year, it was, maybe that was the year before. No, Inside Out was this last year, so we had the kids walking in the parade. Again, the parade probably has 8,000 people lining the streets, and a ton of them are in front of our building. We're like, we used that as a way to say, okay, we want to serve our city. And then I'll just say this, it is a huge, that weekend, fourth weekend in June, is a huge, huge investment. It greatly hinders our church services and our normal church ministry. We have a Saturday night service and we cancel it. We're like, if you're going to show up on Saturday night, you're going to go volunteer and meet people at due days. Sunday morning, we have one service. And then the last couple of years, we said to the city, hey, can we do our church service under the tent? And so we have one church service under the tent Sunday morning. And the whole city can come to. That's this picture here. We have seen God do, and I'll talk about some of the results for that. But we meet every month with the police chief, the city council members, the director of the library, local businesses, the Rotary, other volunteers and city officials, because they're all helping in this committee. And we get to throw a huge party every year, and it has been, again, an unbelievable amount of work, but it has been a way to build bridges in our community. And we're not there, again, to get anything for our church. We're there to serve. Of course, it provides great exposure for our church, and people have come to our church, but that's not why we're doing it. It's the slow build of just finding something that you can do to get people to be like, oh, that church actually does care about the community. Which brings us to the next point, and we're going to go through these quick. The barriers. Barriers, one of them is if you're super judgy when people come to your church or people in your community. Sometimes it's really good, you might think, well, we're not judgy. It's really good to spend some time diagnosing some of these barriers. People walking into a church who have church hurt, they're walking in with all sorts of insecurities. They are just waiting for somebody to say something mean to them or to look at them judgy and be like, see, church doesn't change. The people who don't look or act like Christians, the people who are covered in tattoos, who smell like smoke. We have a recovery ministry in our church, so we get some people showing up that they're smoking a lot outside just to make it through the hour of church service. Or the owner of one of the local tattoo parlors comes and he's like, I'm always curious to what people are going to do. He's heavily tattooed, and we have a number of people like that. People already have enough suspicion about a church. Let's not add to it with any unnecessary barriers. And it helps in our church because we have a local chapter of the Christian Motorcyclists Association. So we always have a few guys, rough-looking guys in Harley jackets and vests and tattooed people and people from the recovery crew. But we have to be mindful of that. What if it's someone who smells like alcohol? What if it is a gay couple? They want to come to church. How is your church going to respond? Do we believe that anybody in any walk of life is welcome and that the church is the place they should be? Because we are communicating that differently in a lot of areas. You ask a lot of people, like, my life has fallen apart, but the last place I feel like I could find help is the church. Because they're used to judgment. The next one is this, phony. First one was judgy, second one is phony. Let's be real, be authentic. Again, everybody says, every church website is going to have the, we're real people, just walking through life, we're real, this, and but a lot of times it's not the case. I've mentioned a couple of really common feedbacks that we've gotten, how you served the community, how we felt welcomed. Another one that I get all the time is, we were amazed that you were open and honest in your sermon about some of the things you've gone through. I talk about times that I've been through counseling. My wife and I talk about going to marriage counseling, talk about some really difficult seasons in our marriage that we walked through. And I'm amazed at how people are amazed by that. Like, whoa, like we didn't know you could talk about that. There's this idea that churches out there are making sure everyone's acting like their life is all together. And if you are just real, talk about your struggles, talk about the mess that you're going on. For people in the community, that is going to be like a magnet. They're like, oh, these people aren't pretending they have it all together. The other one is, and I've already joked about it a little bit, kind of the phony energy and hype, like the, whoa, everything's great, and this is, like, it's like a musical about a church when you go to their church service, right? Everything's like scripted, and this is so awesome, and everything's off the chain, and come on, somebody, if you use a different voice on stage than off stage, it's, you know, I think people are just like, it's kind of that, it's not real. And the other one is this, everyone thinks that everyone is perfect. Everyone is perfect, and we have to get over that. I talk all the time when I'm talking about we need Jesus because we are sinners and we are all still growing in this journey of faith. None of us have it figured out yet. Another one is inward, where you are only focused on the people on the inside. The community can feel that. When we talked to our city, they were this church that was across the street that moved away. We talked to them about that church, and they're like, man, they were difficult. They were never involved. They never wanted to help, and they were always complaining. They were always complaining to the city about how they were treated and this and that. They were always argumentative. If you are a church culture that is going to argue people into the kingdom, people aren't interested in that. And this is a tough balance because people are like, oh, you're just seeker-sensitive and you're watering down the gospel. That's not what we're doing. We're just simply engaging the community and having conversations and pointing them to Jesus. And some churches are just, they've been kind of inward and Christian for so long that if you're only around Christians and inward for so long, you start to get a little bit weird after a while, right? I think that may be the case. Always have connections with people who don't know the Lord. Now, this last barrier, and this one might ruffle some feathers here. This last barrier, political. This has been a struggle to navigate. Anybody in a church had a struggle navigating political things as a church over the last, well, few months and 5 years and 150 years? Certainly recently in Minnesota. I'm originally from Canada. I have friends from Canada who, over the years, they've just looked at Minnesota and Minneapolis, and every time they're like, what in the world are you guys doing in Minneapolis? Like, it just seems like we're trying to be in the center of the news cycle every couple of years. This has been a struggle to navigate. Just this last recent uptick in political volatility with ICE and immigration. Every week, I would hear from people, and they wanted me as the pastor to address it and say what my statement was. And after a while, I'm like, I can't do that every week, because every week there's some train wreck, right? Every week there seems to be something. But really, they wanted me to use my pulpit authority, my voice from God, to validate their views. There was a huge culture war, and we felt it in our church. There was people so ready to leave over political things. We would hear all the time, if I tried to say something, they'd be like, yeah, you talked about this other side too much, or you talked about this more than you talked about that. Like, I had people like, you didn't talk about Charlie Kirk as much as you talked about Renee Good. And I'm like, okay, I didn't know there was a timer, or right? Like, and there was people in the social media world, like, if your pastor's not standing up in favor of law enforcement, then you're at the wrong church and your pastor's gone woke. Like, it's all of these things. Here's what I decided. If I'm trying to build bridges in my community for Jesus, the ultimate thing that's important, I'm not willing to burn any of those over political stuff. So I have political views, but I don't need to make statements. People were so quick to do that, and I just think anytime you did that, you might rally the base of who agree with you, but there's people in the community who are thinking, oh, see, churches, they're just all political. They're all just trying to get people to vote for who they want. We had, I thought COVID was an example where the church, for the most part, missed a great opportunity to demonstrate what it's like to have faith in Jesus above any sort of cultural thing. Instead, I think too many of us got mired in the same arguing, the same complaining and fears and suspicion. These are opportunities to demonstrate our faith means something, right? We had a local coffee shop owned by a gay couple, two older ladies. I've gotten to know them. I'm there all the time. I've gotten to know the manager. There was something that they did that on social media that all the people on the right got really upset about. And so they just got blasted on social media and from people from my church. And they know that these people are from, not my church, but Homestead. And I'm talking to them and their feelings are hurt. They're like, this one guy is in here all the time. We have cared for him and now he's just bashing us. And people are saying, well, I'm never going there and I'm never, like, cancel culture, all this crazy stuff from people in our church. So I had to have a lot of conversations on the phone. And my conversations was, some of them who are leaders in our church. And I said, listen, you can have any political view you want. I just want you to consider the bigger perspective of what you're posting out there. If you're burning bridges with people in our community over trying to get your political soundbite out there, it's not worth it, in my opinion. And as a leader in the church, I'm going to ask you to be mindful of that. And if you can't, then we're going to need to revisit your leadership role in this church, because I don't want to burn bridges unnecessarily. And so I had conversations with a number of people. Our highest calling and allegiance is to Jesus Christ. And there, this desire that I see to combine that with political agenda is doing damage to the bridges that we're trying to build in our communities. It's just not worth it, in my opinion. So that is a barrier. We are called to lead people to Jesus. And we have a wide political spectrum in our church. I heard from people on both sides. Like, within minutes, I had emails from two people in our church on either side of this recent issue. And it was in regards to something I had said about we need to find the middle ground and work together, you know, wishy-washy stuff like that. And they said, one said, thank you for speaking up, but I need you to be stronger, a stronger voice as my pastor, speaking up against evil. And I need you to voice support for law enforcement and rule of government, and this is what the Bible is all about. Okay. The next person said, thanks for your post, but when it comes to standing up against evil, I need my pastor to take a stand against evil and speak in favor of the immigrant and against tyranny from law enforcement. And I was just like, okay, you're both thinking that you are on the side of spiritually good. You both have Bible verses, and yet you are completely opposite. I was just like, wow, this is really something. So I know the pressure that there is to speak up and to take a political side. I just do not see it as being worth it. We have a wide spectrum in our church, and there's times where I look at the two, back when we used to pass the offering plate before COVID. Remember that? Remember those days? And I watch the ushers, and I'm like, those two people who are greeting and ushering together could not be further apart in politics, but here they are serving in the church. That's what I want. I want the church to be an example of unity. So, finally, and we're going to go through these quick, the blessings that we have seen. This has not hindered our church. This has not hindered our church ministry by being very focused on community outreach. The weekend of Top the Tater Days, our church services are really low on the priority list. But I want people to know, you know what, more important sometimes than gathering in a room and singing and listening to a message is get out there and meet people and serve the city. And now because of that, when people are looking for a church, they consider us. They say, oh, we've seen what you do in the community. Oh, we've seen how you care for our kids. We see how you're real people. We see how you are reaching out to community leaders. We feel welcomed and not shamed. That reputation is a slow build. It's taken 11 years. It is worth it. It is worth protecting. We will protect it. Those conversations I had with guys in our church who were bashing the coffee shop, they were direct conversations. But I was like, these are the people I'm trying to reach. What if these people, this gay couple decides, you know what, we want to come give church a try. And then they show up and then they see you three yahoos sitting on the front row who are wanting everyone to cancel their coffee shop. Right? We protect it. And God has opened doors. I think God is always faithful to what we steward well, with our resources, with people, with our time. God's faithful to bless it. And He has blessed us in community engagement. Christy and I are both now on the police chaplain. We're police chaplains. The coffee shop owner, one day I was in there and she just said, you know what, I got a question for you. It's a spiritual question. And she just talked about something she's feeling in her life. And I'm like, I believe that that's God drawing you to a relationship with him. I said, I'm happy to talk to you about that. The school district now knows if you need anything, call Homestead. And if they can help you, they will. We've now grown into not only our Top the Taters carnival, but my wife, once we got into this building, wanted to have a Christmas carnival. This will give you a little insight. I know we're at dismissal time, so if you got to go, you can do that. Sorry, I talked too long. She said, I wanted to have a Christmas carnival, but the first year in our building was COVID and we can't have people in a room. So she said, here's what I want to do. I want to build a slide coming out of our window, and Santa's going to be on the street and people are going to drive their cars up and Santa's going to say, yell up to the window, we need 4 presents. And it was just like little candy bags and promo stuff. And then out the slide, the elves would be up there and they would slide them down the slide and they would shoot right into the car window and then the people would go. Again, the engineers in our church loved it. The volunteers loved it. And it was just one of those things like, oh my goodness, it's a very creative way. That's how my wife thinks. If you don't have a Christy Kerr around, some of these things are going to be harder to pull off, right? But it then grew. The city wanted to do like a Christmas holiday lighted parade. And they were trying to do it. And they said, well, we're not going to do it unless Homestead is helping, because they already have their carnival. So they said, when are you doing your carnival and can we tag onto that? And so we did that for a couple of years and then it grew into our carnival. One year I put a skating rink on our yard and that was incredibly difficult to maintain, so we don't do that anymore. But the last few years, we now have the city holiday lighted parade. And so all the businesses, they light up their vehicles and we provide the Santa because our Hastings campus pastor, Jeff Merricks, grows a great gray beard and he looks just like Santa. And so we do that. The city then said, we want to have a city Christmas tree. Can we put it on your lot? And we said, sure. So that's them, the city workers there, putting the Christmas tree in our yard. We dug a hole in the middle of our grass and I guess I'm okay with it. Now our lighted Christmas tree is there. So we are now kind of throwing our Christmas carnival as well. Here's a picture I want to show. That's my wife in the middle. That's our mayor, he is no longer our mayor. That was the mayor at the time. And that's our police chief. And he's actually retired too. But these were the people that we met while doing all of these community events. They have both since gotten saved and come to our church. The police chief is there volunteering all the time. He's retired. The new police chief has started coming to the church. A lot of the police officers are starting to come to the church. Here's a picture that I posted once during our 24 hours of prayer. This was 5 a.m. and some high school kids showed up. It's connected, I promise. And I just posted that on Instagram and I said, isn't it cool? Like, God's doing something in our youth if at 5 a.m. before school some teenagers are showing up to pray. Well, the mayor saw that post when he woke up. And then all of a sudden, 3-4 hours later, he's in our church. He's never been there before. My wife was there when he showed up and went over and said, Mayor, what are you doing here? He's like, I don't know what I'm doing here, but I needed to be here. He said, I saw that picture that Jeff posted on Instagram and something in me was like, you need to be there. And Christy's like, I think God is drawing you to him. Do you think that God is speaking to you? I do. And Christy led him to the Lord in that moment. Calls me later. He's like, I think the mayor just got saved by just showing. He just drove up. The police chief has started coming. We've started a back to school carnival where people give money to provide backpacks for kids to show up, to have a great carnival, going to back to school. We give away a backpack. That's I guess maybe carnival number 3 that we throw. And then finally, we've used our building for if the community needs something. I got a couple more pictures and then we're done. The local schools, the special needs teachers said, our special needs students want to have a prom and a dance, but we can't find anywhere to do it. I said, we'll host it. I'm like, what are you going to charge? Nothing. And so we hosted the dance party for all the special needs students. So this young man was tentative to get on the dance floor. So that's me busting out my best dance moves trying to. And then, so another picture of that. Again, it was just, we've seen God open doors in such a miraculous way. And I think it's just because we have been faithful to steward that. We want to serve the city. And God is blessing it. What we steward well, God is going to blessed. So whatever your context is, just simply find ways that you can serve. Find some needs and just say, we don't want to get anything of it. We're just here to serve. And then be consistent. Follow through. Leave it better than you found it. And that is going to build unbelievable blessings in your community. So I know I went over. If you got to go, that's fine. I'm here. I know it's lunch break now. The food trucks are freezing cold out there, but you can warm up by the pizza oven probably. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you so much.